Welcome to the SCMS Classical Conversation Podcast, recorded in the new Center for Chamber Music during the Seattle Chamber Music Society's 2020 Virtual Summer Festival. I'm Dave Beck from Classical King FM. I hope you enjoy these in-depth conversations with festival musicians. You can find more episodes at seattlechambermusic.org and most podcasting platforms. Please rate and review us wherever you listen. During the four decades that he has performed at SCMS, cellist Ronald Thomas has touched audiences with his beautifully refined sound on the cello. He speaks with us about his lifelong fascination with sound production. Much of his concept of beautiful sound stems from his close listening and analysis of symphonic recordings. Ron Thomas spoke with us from the new Center for Chamber Music in downtown Seattle, part of the SCMS 2020 Virtual Summer Festival. I want to get a little bit of your origin story as a cellist, and I'm curious how a cello first came into your hands and who kind of guided that process.
Well, that was just kind of an accident, you know. I was a brass player, but I developed asthma, so I needed another instrument.
How far were you into your brass studies?
I played a brass instrument from when I was 4 years old, and then when I was seven, my dad, who was a musician, thought the cello would be a good idea. So we just went from there.
Yeah. And so this switch to cello happened at about what age?
Seven.
Yeah, seven.
Yeah. And by the time I was 10, I was studying with the principal cellist, the New York Philharmonic. I was very lucky. He took me when I was very young. And so I had wonderful playing very close up, you know, in lessons which to model myself.
Yeah. That gentleman's name was Loren Monroe, as I
yes. Yeah. He was a fascinating man. He wasn't wordy in the way explaining everything, but he would take my little cello and start playing, and it was so mesmerizing. It sounded so great. It's so much better than it sounded in my hands. That it was the best part of the lessons was to just watch him play. For me, well, that's how I learned.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. One of the things I have always admired about you as a cellist is your palette of color on the instrument. And I was watching a video that you did maybe for the Musicians in the New World Symphony. I think that was the web. And you were talking about just, you know, the way that you kind of experiment with getting particular sounds, whether it's changing strings or do you consider yourself as part of a particular school of playing that emphasizes timbre in color or how is that value developed?
No, not really. I think that was part of I've always been a big music listener. You know, not all musicians listen to a lot of recordings. I mean, I have continued to listen to a lot of music throughout my life. And so I've been introduced to the whole gamut, the rainbow of things that I don't always agree, but you get an idea of what's possible. Mm-hmm. And as you come to understand music, you realize what is appropriate for what music. You know, it's the same sound for all this music is not appropriate. You know, there are places where you shouldn't be making big color changes because you draw too much attention to yourself. If it's in the service of the music, absolutely. But the music itself varies so greatly that there are opportunities to really change color. And I've been through changing strings forever. You know, I'm always changing. I came to steel strings kind of late. You know, I played on gut strings for a long time. And I still go back and forth. I play this, I play that, you know, and I have my favorites. And and things that work well for me. And mm-hmm. and of course, in my advancing years here, I'm just trying to pick them up and put them down in the right place.
I was so interested in what you're saying about musicians maybe not listening to recordings, or you know, not having that curiosity to think about like what's out there or how are different people doing things.
Yeah, I don't mean to make a qualitative judgment about that at all. It's just, I mean, I don't listen to cellists anymore, you know, but I have known the whole body of the symphonic repertoire for decades, you know, and I was never an orchestra player, but it just fascinated me. And that's a color palette too.
Oh yeah.
You know, when you realize different orchestras sound different. How does that work? Mm-hmm. You know, really, how does an orchestra that's made up of the same instruments, you know, and the same number of players, how does that sound so different?
Right.
You know, and it, obviously it's a fascinating thing because traditions are passed down from many years ago, you know, and the way the orchestra turns over personnel isn't all at once. As a person comes in, they kind of pick up the baton that has been established before them, and then another person comes in, and another person comes in. And so all of these traditions, why is the New York Philharmonic Mahler's orchestra, you know, still? It, because he was there, he put a stamp on it with his music, and that has been passed down. Mm-hmm. It was kind of crazy when you think that he was there in 1910.
It's been a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of thinking now about New York Philharmonic and sound, color, and a lot of things coming together in this question is like, you're going to be playing a fair amount of Schubert in Seattle this summer.
A string trio, one of his earliest works, which he curiously abandoned after writing one movement because he didn't like it. I mean, it's a wonderful morsel. This one movement, Schubert trio. And he abandoned ship on that and began and wrote a second string trio in the same key, another B-flat trio, which is kind of, ironically, more gnarly and difficult in a lot of more problematic, you know, in a lot of ways. This first string trio is just flows in the most natural way. It's hard to imagine what there was not to like.
you're going to be playing with Cynthia Phelps, your wife, and Tessa Lark for this trio we're talking about. Have you played with Tessa before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I played with Tessa as long ago when she was a student. But we've played here also together. So she's wonderful, and the combination is just perfect.
Yeah, and I think that we talk about color and experimenting with color, and Schubert is a great study.
In Schubert, you have to be careful because you can easily go outside the lines. There are lines, you know. I mean, there are lines with everything, you know, and it's easy to color outside the lines, to draw too much attention to individual machinations, instead of letting, you have to do enough to enhance what's in the music, but avoid distractions. Yeah, Schubert's a difficult composer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know any music that's not difficult, but Schubert's music has to be just precisely stated, you know, with expression and warmth and a personal approach, but staying in the lines.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to make the connection. You play on a fairly modern cello that's actually from a Seattle maker.
That's right, Jason Starkey. from Seattle made my cello, and it's a wonderful instrument. It's modeled after a Gruncino, which was the cello I played on for most of my professional life. Mm-hmm. So it feels familiar. Mm-hmm. And I think he's really got something going with the cellos.
Yeah. Whether it's your Gruncino or this more modern Starkey instrument, what do you, as we continue this conversation about, you know, sound and color, what do you look
again,
for?
Again, something that has a voice, mm-hmm. you know, that has an individual voice. And, of course, I want something with bass. And that's not easy to come by because instruments need some time to break in mm-hmm. and develop that so that it's all vibrating and the low notes really are giving you a satisfaction. But these my cello's developing beautifully, and it has a voice in the top register, mm-hmm. an individual voice.
Yeah. When we were talking earlier about discovering steel strings, gut strings, when you acquired this instrument, was that when the change of the types of strings that you use or what?
Well, you know, I mean, gut strings are difficult at best. They never stay in tune, and it's gotten to the place where if your colleagues, if you play on gut strings, your colleagues you're playing chamber music with are kind of startled by the racket that they make up close. Mm. Now, of course, all that scraping and something like that kind of falls off, you know, after 20 feet. Mm. But it can be very distracting for people. So in general, and plus the steel strings, the quality and the variety has developed such that it's not difficult to find what works.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Classical Conversation Podcast. The podcast is a co-production of Seattle Chamber Music Society and Classical King FM. Bill Levy is our recording engineer. You can find more episodes at seattlechambermusic.org and most podcasting platforms. Please rate and review us when you listen. The podcast is produced by Nikhil Sarma and Rachel Soprati. To learn more, go to seattlechambermusic.org. I'm Dave Beck.